Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC.
So let's rock it!
Hammer is right over there. I'm Nigel. This Chinese balloon thing, the spy balloon, Biden's balloon, as I call it, it's just embarrassing. It makes our country look weak. It makes us look like we're slow to respond to incoming threats. I mean, look, the disaster in Afghanistan and that pullout is on a higher level than this, but just add this to the list of things that make our country look weak and incompetent.
If this were a test run for China of some capacity, just to see what they could get away with, the answer is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. So Biden said that he ordered that Chinese spy balloon to be shot down on Wednesday, but was overruled by General Mark Milley.
On Wednesday, when I was briefed on the balloon, I ordered the Pentagon to shoot it down on Wednesday as soon as possible. They decided, without doing damage to anyone on the ground, they decided that the best time to do that was as it got over water outside within 12-mile limit. They successfully took it down.
And the recommendation was from your national security.
I told them to shoot it down.
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
But the recommendation.
They said to me, let's wait till the safest place to do it.
So the commander in chief makes a call.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm no Biden fan, but he is the commander in chief. He makes the call, and Milley says no. Like, this tells you he's not calling the shots here, right? Could you imagine if even Barack Obama, right? Take
Please.
Trump aside. You know how Trump would respond. Even Obama, I'm sorry, you're telling me no?
Well, if you recall, Barack Obama wanted to go in and kill Osama bin Laden, and who was the one guy in the room saying, you better not do that?
That would be one Joe Biden.
Just a little side note there.
And he always delivers speeches where he mentions the raid like he was somebody that approved of it. Joe Biden never approved of that. And now he's got Milley. And keep in mind, Milley was also the same dude that leaked information to China, back-channeled it against Trump when he was the president.
I love how Biden goes, yeah, I told him to shoot it down as soon as possible. And they go, yeah, actually, we'll wait. Actually, you know what? We're going to wait on that. He goes, Biden says, shoot it down. And says, well, okay, we'll shoot it down, but we're going to wait. That's like kind of like when Trump made Chris Christie order the meatloaf. Hey, look, you can look at the menu, get whatever you want, but you're ordering the meatloaf.
And you're going to like it. I love that story. I totally forgot about that.
Biden, I'll shoot down the balloon in our own sweet time. You just sit tight there, old man.
You let this spy balloon go all the way across the country.
It's crazy, man.
Spying in on some of our nuclear missile silos and various restricted government areas all across the country. And the excuse we were given was, well, we couldn't shoot it down because, you know, it might crash to the ground and hurt somebody. So you're telling me that if a plane was in the air and you knew it was going to crash into a building, let's say the White House, go back to September 11th. If you knew there was a plane in the air, you're telling me you wouldn't shoot it down because you didn't want people to get hurt on the ground? It's an easy fix. All you have to do is fire off the EAS system, the emergency alert system. You have your local authorities tell you to get into a place where you feel safe, comfortable, and you do what you have to do. If national security is at stake, don't tell us, well, what can you do? You know, it's over land. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
And they could have shut it down in the islands in Alaska, some of the most sparsely populated areas on the planet where there's nobody. They should have shot it down then.
They knew about this thing a while back.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothers me the most is that had some folks in Montana not said, what the hell is that? Biden wouldn't have said a word. He didn't want anybody to know this was going on.
He didn't want to ruin his Secretary of State's trip to China.
Bingo.
Blinken was on his way to meet President Xi, which is unusual because Blinken is on a lower level than Xi, and Xi doesn't really meet with those kinds of people. So this was going to be a big meeting.
And he was trying to keep this a secret as long as he could. That's so embarrassing, and it makes the United States look so incredibly weak. You mentioned it earlier, the Afghan debacle, what's happening at the border, these balloons, it's embarrassing. And now they're trying to shift the blame over to Donald Trump. You knew sooner or later it was going to be Donald Trump's fault, right?
Oh, sure.
So there were reports that came out that Trump had this happen to him multiple times. These reports came out over the weekend. Well, here's the thing. Trump, his Secretary of Defense, who hates him, his Secretary of State, and two former DNI say there were no Chinese spy balloons during their tenure, but one source, an unnamed source from the Biden administration, claimed to a liberal news network, oh yeah, it happened, so now we're running on it. Don't you think if this had happened before and people knew, this would have been leaked out a long time ago?
It could have made Trump look horrible.
Everything from Trump's presidency was leaked out. This is a pretty big piece of information. I promise you, this would have been leaked out earlier. Now, Representative Mike Waltz said this morning, quote, there's speculation that the Pentagon deliberately did not tell President Trump of the spy balloons because they thought Trump would be too proactive and too aggressive.
Provocative.
And proactive. They knew Donald Trump would blow this thing out of the air.
And then brag about it.
Right. So let that sink in for just a minute. If Representative Mike Waltz is correct that the Pentagon kept information from Donald Trump, this is a complete failure of the way things are supposed to work here. A United States general did not notify the commander-in-chief of a potential threat to the homeland. Now, General Mattis was the defense secretary at this time. If this is true, and again, we don't know if it is, but if this is true, he's got some questions to answer here.
Here's something else that people aren't keying in on. Here's what you need to know is that the lie is changing. First, it was, you know, this happened a bunch of times during Trump. He didn't do anything about it. The Biden administration now is saying that the incidents were not discovered until after Trump had already left. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is mainstream media, which is, you know, the right leg of the you know, the direct arm of the Democratic Party, is trying to make it look like Biden is this military badass, like he's Tom Cruise shooting stuff out of the sky, and Trump was incompetent and didn't do anything when the same thing happened while he was in office. The story has changed from that now to, oh, well, they didn't actually discover the Chinese spy balloons until after Trump left office, and they're not telling us how they know that.
So in 24 hours, the story has changed.
Yeah, it's, but the narrative is still there, and that's all people know now. You go with this lie about how Trump let this happen under his tutelage, under his administration, and now it's like, oh, well, we didn't find out about these supposed balloons that were flying, quote, near Texas and near Florida, not over, but near, if there were really any. We didn't find out about it until after Trump left office.
Listen,
but what is everybody saying now? That's, you know, what is everybody saying?
If Donald Trump knew about these balloons and he did not act on it, shame on Donald Trump. If General Mattis knew about these balloons, that if they existed, and did not tell Donald Trump, that's ridiculously embarrassing and he needs to be held accountable. And of course, we know Joe Biden knew about this and he let it go all the way across the country. You know, we've talked about this before. Where else, other than Washington politics, would this policy make sense? If you were a police officer and you knew you had the bad guy, you knew where he was at, you cornered him, you could track him, you would arrest him right away. You don't let the bad guy go across the country, kill 14 more people, and say, we made our arrest, thank God we kept people safe. No, that's not how any of this works.
Did you see in, in South Carolina, they had to warn residents not to shoot at the spy balloon?
God bless them.
You know, they shot this thing down. They shot this thing off the coast of Myrtle Beach, I believe. And by the way, compelling television. It was. Were you watching it?
I was not.
I saw it happen live. It was crazy. But they actually had to put out a tweet asking people not to shoot at it. And later, there was a little short press conference in South Carolina, which we have for you now.
All right, listen up. As chief of police, which, by the way, is not a racist term, I would just like to remind all citizens not to shoot at Chinese spy balloons or any other balloons for that matter, because someone shot down a giant red balloon yesterday that was actually flying over a car dealership. Another person shot down a drifting Mylar birthday balloon with a picture of SpongeBob on it. There's no reason for that. And also, we had a drunk guy shooting at yesterday's full moon. Please, cut it out, peoples. And another reminder, not to shoot zombies here in town. Those are just tweakers.
Okay. That's all. Got it.
Wow.
Some amazing times we live in. I love the brave Patriots of South Carolina. We're like, I got this.
Man, it was must-see TV for me on Saturday. First, the Chinese spy balloon. I think Fox was the only one. I thought I heard Tony say Fox was the only one that was following it. I was actually watching it live as it got shot down. And so that lasted for an hour or two, but it led straight into the IU-Purdue game.
Man, how many beers did you down between spy balloon and the IU-Purdue game?
Let me see. I don't have enough hands to count, actually. It is the Hammer and Nigel show. My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there. IU beating Purdue, number one Purdue over the weekend.
Still number one Purdue.
They
stayed at number one. The new poll is out, and it helps that some other folks got beat too. Like Tennessee lost and some other folks lost, so Purdue still the number one team in the country, and the Hoosiers are up to 18 in the country. It was a fun game.
Yeah, it was ups, downs, highs, lows, emotions running. I was at a party down the street at my neighbor's house at my neighbors Marcus and Deb. And there was IU fans and there was Purdue fans. There was both there. My buddy I was sitting next to, Mike, is a big Purdue fan. Marcus is a Purdue fan. And they were just yelling at each other the entire time because there was a bunch of IU grads there.
Sure. And this is the way it's supposed to be, man. Like, I hope when Indiana goes to West Lafayette in a couple weeks, final Saturday in February, I hope it's rowdy, I hope it's rocking, and I hope the Purdue fans camp out early, because that's the way this game is supposed to be like all the time.
And by the way, just a side note, IU-Purdue ladies played the next day.
They did.
Played on
Sold out.
Sold out. First time since 2000. That was up in Lafayette, though.
Right.
And your cousin, by the way, Coach Gerald's, happens to be the head coach of Purdue. They were keeping up with IU for a little while there.
They were. IU ended up winning that game going away. The Lady Hoosiers are number two in the country right now. So, it's been a big weekend of basketball. The atmosphere at Assembly Hall, man.
I couldn't imagine.
Wow. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't know what was more rowdy. Yesterday, when Purdue came in as number one, or when that Kentucky team came in undefeated, that Watford hit the shot at the end of the game. Those are the two most electric crowds I think Assembly Hall's had in a while.
I think the Kentucky one's more electric just because of how it ended.
Right. And the fact that it's Kentucky. Like, who do you think is a more hated rival for Indiana? If you're an Indiana fan, who do you hate more, Purdue or Kentucky?
Oh, I would think Purdue, probably, right? I mean, it's a historic rivalry for sure.
Right. And you play them twice a year, though. Like in the past, when it was Kentucky, you'd only play them once a year. And then Calipari became a little bit of a weasel and didn't want to play anymore because they got beat and the students stormed the court. So hit us up on Twitter, at Hammer and Nigel. If you are an IU fan, who do you hate more, Kentucky or Purdue? Here is IU head coach Tone Loke talking about the atmosphere.
We got the best fans in college basketball. I mean, no doubt in my mind. I've seen it for 40-some years of my life. I mean, since I came in here in 1976, the fan base here has not wavered one bit, and they were fantastic tonight.
He does sound like Tone Loke, doesn't he?
Ever since Jake Query pointed that out, I can't stop hearing it now.
So are you okay with the court storming yesterday?
Oh, yeah, always. I don't care if you're
they're number one, you know?
A blue blood or not. Let the college kids have fun, man. Especially Indiana. As much as those kids have had the tuition jacked up on them the last decade, let them get their money's worth. Let them storm the court a little bit. But I will say this. there's some miserable people on social media. Like, if you want to find who the most miserable bastard in the room is, it's the old curmudgeon saying, I don't like the court storming. You should be above that. You're Indiana. These college kids at Indiana, they're not used to the team being good. They're not.
True.
So let them have a good time. And as for the Purdue fans, knock it off. Knock off the IU is our little brother stuff that I also saw on social media. Because I think I can be honest here. I'm coming from an SEC perspective. I'm a Tennessee Volunteers guy. So you heard me criticize Indiana. Purdue fans, cut the crap with the little brother stuff. Win something of note, and then maybe we can shift the conversation. Your banners are dusty. Yeah, well, there's something to collect dust at Assembly Hall. So stop it. New York City will always be a Yankees town, even though the Mets may be better from time to time. State of Indiana. Indiana's always going to be Big Brother. That's the way it is right now. That's the hard reality. Sorry if you don't want to hear it. Doesn't mean Purdue's not good. Hell, I think they're probably the favorite to win the national championship this year. But knock off the little brother stuff. It makes you look bad. It's embarrassing. It's the Hammer and Nigel show.
The only way to bag a classy lady is to give her two tickets to the gun show.
It's Monday Gun Day with the Gun Guy.
Just watch out for the guns. They'll get you.
Stop calling your arms guns.
The Hammer and Nigel Show, 93 WIBC.
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is here, also joining us live in studio. Second Amendment attorney, licensed firearms instructor, Guy Relfer. Guy, how are you?
Man, I'm great, and thanks as always to our sponsor, Fort Liberty Firearms in Avon, 8401 East Highway 36. Great place to buy firearms, ammunition, or accessories. Check out my buddies at the fort at fortlibertyfirearms.com.
Got some Second Amendment stuff to get to here, but just your initial thoughts on what I'm calling Biden's balloon, even though it's the Chinese spy balloon, it's Biden's balloon, and how embarrassing it is for this country, how weak it makes us look.
Well, you know, it's a good point, because my initial thought was to laugh, and the reason I was laughing is because all the great memes that came out.
Yeah. That's what we were talking about during the commercial break, before you walked
gonna
in.
Miss the memes. I mean,
my favorite one was, Dear Eric, Happy Birthday, Fang Fang. That was my absolute favorite.
But I've seen Belichick. I've seen the Houston Astros.
So there were some really fantastic memes. But at the bottom line is that it embarrasses us as a country, that we sat there as a country and allowed what we knew to be a spy balloon, float over pretty much the length of the country. And you know, the reason we didn't shoot it down earlier ostensibly was because, well, we didn't want to imperil anybody on the ground. You know, when I first heard about this thing, it was over Montana. Have you flown over Montana? I mean,
it's some of the most, like I said earlier, sparsely populated areas in the
beautiful
world. And Alaska, for that matter.
When it came in, right, was across Alaska. And it's beautiful out there. It's spectacular. I spent a lot of time riding a motorcycle through Montana. But my goodness, you could certainly pick a spot to down that thing before it went across the rest of the country. So I considered it to be, an embarrassment, a black eye for America. We've suffered so many of those under this administration, and I think this is just one more.
So let's get into a couple things happening at the Indiana State House. The General Assembly still happening. We've been keeping our eye on a couple different 2A bills making their way through. What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, we're still frustrated because we can't get the chairman of the Courts and Criminal Code Committee in the House to give us a hearing on the self-defense bill that would allow, for instance, a business owner to avoid a felony if they simply point a gun at someone and say, you're not going to destroy my business, someone who wants to come in and firebomb their business or otherwise destroy their business. Because right now, if you point a gun at someone merely to protect your property, including your business, that's a felony in Indiana, which is ridiculous, and we're trying to get that fixed. So that's a downside. We can't get Representative McNamara to give us a hearing, and that's frustrating a lot of people.
So right now, if somebody throws a Molotov cocktail through a business and the business owner comes out and points his weapon at that guy, both people could go to jail.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's still arson. That's a good point, Jason. I mean, it's still arson, so the bad guy goes to jail. But it, but if I'm merely protecting my property, so I'm not saying, no, I thought he was going to throw that at me. I thought he was attacking me. I'm merely protecting my business or my other property. I could be protecting my car or my wallet, you know, whatever it is. If I merely point a gun at someone, not to defend my life or my safety, but to protect my property in Indiana under the state of the law, I go to jail on a felony. As ridiculous as that is, and this is the third year we've had the same bill that would fix that, and we've pushed it every time, and we can't get a hearing from a Republican who chairs the Courts and Criminal Code Committee, and that's frustrating to me and inexplicable to me. I can't really understand why not.
So what's the reason here? Because it feels like every time the people of Indiana feel like something needs to happen, it takes 3 to 4 times longer than it should. I mean, Sunday sales of alcohol. This was something the people of Indiana wanted overwhelmingly for years. Yeah. But we were always told, we know what's best for you. Well, live dealers at the casinos in Shelbyville and Anderson. People have been wanting that for years. When I worked there, it was Pence and Bosma that made my life hell, saying, well, that's an expansion of gaming. You've already got a dealer there hitting a button. We just wanted to give him cards. But it took 3 times longer. Constitutional carry. That's another example.
10 years.
Other states have been doing this for a long time, but quote, conservative red Indiana was late to the party on that. Why are we always behind?
You know, I don't know. It's frustrating to me. I mean, I again, as a 2A guy, I'm thrilled with where we are generally in Indiana. I would take our gun laws literally over any other state in the country. People always come and say, oh, well, you know, there's pro-gun states like Texas. I would take our gun laws over Texas's any time. So we're still trying to make improvements. But overall, with especially now that we've got constitutional carry done, I mean, you know, I love where we are, and the General Assembly deserves credit for that. But to your question and to your point, I don't know why it takes so long. The inertia, you know, the propensity of an object to remain, still when it's still, that has a powerful effect in the Indiana General Assembly. I think in this particular circumstance where we have such a common sense bill, I hate to use that term in the context of gun control because it gets used against us all the time, but you know, where you ought to say, you know, if I was a business owner, I'd be able to point my gun at somebody who wants to throw a Molotov cocktail through the store of my business, the window of my business, and destroy my business. I shouldn't go to jail on a felony. You think that's pretty common sense. You have to speculate a little bit. And the honest answer is I don't know why we can't get a hearing. I have a feeling it's out of fear for having to face the mad moms, you know, who are going to come in just like they did against constitutional carry, just like they did against my self-defense immunity bill that we passed in 2019. They'll come in and say something like, well, this promotes vigilante justice and there'll be blood in the streets. Yes. And oh my, you know, we're promoting violence in Indiana when, of course, none of that ever happens when we hear that same shrill response.
These excuses they always give are the worst.
Always.
Go back to the alcohol bill for just a moment. I remember Nigel and I on the air, and one of the excuses that a representative gave us as to why certain places can sell beer cold and other places can't, there may be out of control teens drinking beer in the aisle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember this.
Out of control teenagers drinking cold beer left and right.
I was wondering, actually, to go to that. That's hilarious.
Even though I'm a 2A guy, I've always wanted Sunday sales forever. And I actually started a Facebook page. And it said Sunday sales in 2018, 2000, whatever the year was, we really thought we could make it happen. And people came on there accusing me of all kinds of things. And one person came on there and posted and said, you know, I grew up with a father who's an alcoholic, and I just look forward to Sundays because I thought, you know, I might have one day without my father, you know, being able to go out and buy liquor and get drunk, and now you're trying to take that away from me. And I said, your dad wasn't smart enough to buy more on Saturday?
Right.
I mean,
and you know what? They still screwed up the law because you can't buy until noon.
Well, so, noon to 8.
Yeah. So noon to 8. You have an 8-hour window. Yeah.
So on Saturday at 6 a.m., I'm good. But on Sunday, not till noon.
And every once in a while, they'll get cute and make an exception. Like when the Final Four was here, yeah, or right, if it's Indy 500 weekend. It's okay then, but other times, absolutely not.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's just no logic to this. And let's face it, when the government just gets the hell out of our way, life is better. And that's pretty much my whole legislative agenda, is getting the government the hell out of our way.
Monday Gun Day with Guy Relford here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. Another gun law found to be unconstitutional. You sent me a story this morning about the Fifth Circuit reversing conviction of a Texas man.
Well, yeah, and this is a big deal because what this is this is exactly what I came and talked to you guys about and that I predicted after the Supreme Court's decision in the Bruin case. And I'll bring that back around. But what this is the Fifth Circuit, and that's a federal circuit that just has jurisdiction over Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. But that federal circuit has come out and said the law that says someone under a domestic violence order of protection, that if they possess a gun, that's a felony and they go to jail for 10 years. Okay. The Fifth Circuit looked at that under the new test defined by Bruin. And real quickly, I'll back up. Bruin just dealt with the law in New York that said you can't get a handgun license without some government bureaucrat having to basically touch you on the shoulder with their sword and deem you worthy, right? It was discretionary. It was a may issue system. And the Supreme Court said, now that's unconstitutional. We're setting it aside. And I said at the time, and I said it right here with you guys in this studio, I said, that impacts only a few states that have similar systems. But the bigger deal is that the Supreme Court said, here's how you decide two-way cases. They said, you don't look at this balancing test that courts had been using for years, where they said, well, you know, if there's a compelling state interest, like keeping people safe, a little infringement's okay. They came out and said, no, that's...
a little infringement. Yeah. That's like being a little pregnant, isn't it?
I mean, and I'm making it a little more simplistic than it was, but that's basically exactly what they said. So they said, no, we're not doing this balancing anymore. You look at the text and history and tradition around constitutional protections in a particular area, in this case, the Second Amendment, and unless that supports this particular law, it's unconstitutional. That's the new test. I mean, it should have been the test all along. It's been the test in some jurisdictions. Supreme Court made that clear in Bruin. And I said right then, I said, licensing in New York is just the example. That new test is going to set aside gun laws one after the other all across the country. And that's exactly what's happening. It's happening in jurisdiction after jurisdiction. And this decision by the Fifth Circuit says, you know what? Someone who hasn't committed a crime, you're not a felon, you haven't committed the crime of domestic battery or any other, they just had an order of protection issued against them, preventing them from doing something that then might be illegal. The idea that that person's a prohibited possessor, and if they possess a gun, they go to prison for 10 years, that's not consistent with the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment, and similar restrictions that have been in place in this country over this period of time. That's unconstitutional. Now, that's just the Fifth Circuit. Doesn't apply in Indiana, doesn't apply outside those three states I mentioned. But what this is it's an indication of where gun laws and gun restrictions that a lot of us have been calling unconstitutional for a long time, about where that's going to go in this country going forward. That's why it's a big, big deal. And a lot of us are looking at that going, oof, the gun control people have got to be really nervous right now.
Do you own any guns that could have reached the Chinese spy balloon? No, seriously, they had to put the South Carolina, York County Sheriff's Department had to tweet this out. Yes, there are reports that the Chinese balloon is flying over our area at the moment. It's flying 60,000 feet. Don't try to shoot it. Your rifle rounds will not reach it. Be responsible. What comes up goes down.
Well, you know, it's
USA! USA!
There's a dang old balloon.
It's interesting you would ask me that, Naj, because we actually did a little math, which is not my strong suit, but did a little math over the weekend. And I own the most long-range rifle I have. I have a beautiful range. It's called an advanced sniper rifle and 300 Win Mag from Bell Precision Rifles, cool, right here in Indiana, one of the best rifle makers in the world. And but it's a 300 Win Mag, and I was doing a little calculation to say, not that I was going to take a shot at this thing, but I was just,
but
I was curious, and it looked like I could potentially get to about 60,000 feet, it would be really, really slow and probably not do much damage. In fact, getting ready to turn around and come the other direction in terms of downward. But I looked at that, and no, it didn't look like this thing was, it's something like 70 or 80,000 feet for a while. So it didn't look like I could quite get there. And even if I could reach it, I might be able to just, you know, my bullet might just go kiss it on the forehead and then descend to Earth after that.
You had, I'm looking at the gun now. You posted it on your Facebook page. You had like 1,000 likes on that. It's Guy Rel from pointing a gun at somebody and just says, spy balloon?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, it's actually my cover picture on my Facebook page, which is there for a reason, by the way. You go to my Facebook page, you see that, you got a problem, you probably don't want to follow me. But no, and it's this beautiful rifle I have. It's a very high velocity, incredible rifle. But when I posted that, you're right. A whole bunch of people kept on there going, you couldn't take down the balloon with that. And I'm like, humor, hello. I'm waving my arms. It's funny, humor. Stay with me.
If anybody has any questions or would like to reach out to you, how do they find you?
It's always relfordlaw.com, man. Relfordlaw.com.
Guy, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC. So let's
rock it. Hello, my name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there with a very special guest on the drivehubler.com hotline.
John Elliott, former deputy assistant to the president and senior director for strategic communications at the National Security Council, joining us here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. John, thank you so much for the time. We got a lot of different layers to this Chinese spy balloon story. A lot of questions, but let's start with the one I think that's the most important. How did this happen? How does a balloon that we know is a Chinese spy balloon allowed to just go across the country? How did this happen?
Well, thank you both for having me on once again. And the answer to your question real quick is that it happened because it was allowed to happen by this administration and directly by this president. What President Biden has said is that he wanted to shoot it down right away, but his generals told him that there was too big of a risk to do that. Well, I'm sorry, but the generals aren't in charge. Under our Constitution, the commander-in-chief is the president. And when I was at the White House, President Trump, he made the decisions. And this was not the case with Biden, where he essentially decided not to make that decision. He had so many times to shoot this thing down, so many opportunities. He could have done it over the ocean when it came by the Aleutians and went down toward our mainland. He could have done it together with NORAD, which is an alliance with Canada, while it was over empty Canada. And then both senators from Montana, Republican and Democrat, have both said that they could have taken it down over Montana with no problem because there's nobody out there. And if there's anybody who says that, then look, it's the two senators from the state. So there were so many opportunities to do this. And frankly, gentlemen, what I was saying is that, look, this is such an embarrassment to this president that China may actually have done us a favor by showing the American people just how weak he's been up until now and for the last 2 years on China. And it really puts pressure on right before the State of the Union.
Yeah, but John, we're speaking with John Elliott, former deputy assistant of President Trump, senior director for strategic communications and National Security Council. Listen what they're doing. Listen to this article from the Associated Press. This was from an hour ago. U.S. officials said Monday that improvements ordered by President Joe Biden to strengthen defenses against Chinese espionage helped identify last week's spy balloon and determine that similar flights were conducted at multiple points by a Trump administration. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said Monday that after Biden took office, the U.S., quote, enhanced our surveillance of our territorial space. We enhanced our capacity to detect things that Trump was unable to detect. You see the narrative going here? Can you believe this? They're trying to make Biden look like the hero here.
Well, this is exactly what they did in Afghanistan when they had such a debacle of an exit from Afghanistan. I'm a Marine veteran myself, and we had 13, mostly Marines, that were killed in that debacle. And suddenly they spun it as a victory for Biden in pulling us out of there when it was an absolute disgrace on the world stage. So this is the MO of this White House, is whenever they have something that goes wrong, and let me tell you, it's something goes wrong all the time with this administration, not just on national security. But when they do have something that goes wrong, they do one of two things. They either say it was caused by President Trump, or they say that it happened under Trump in some way and that we made it better. And that's exactly the way they did it here, by now shooting this ridiculous theory that somehow it transited our airspace under Trump. But if you look very carefully about what they're saying, they say the quote is that there is forensic historical evidence that it transited. Look, if there were evidence and if they knew what they were talking about, they would give a time, a place, and a date.
Right.
And they would say, this is exactly when it happened, and you're getting none of that from the White House.
John, based off your experience, what's the rest of the world saying right now about the United States after this?
Well, it's once again, it's another Afghanistan, and what they're saying is, just like the Chinese showed that this was probably a test balloon, if you will, a trial balloon, literally, by the Chinese, in the sense that not only do they want to gather intelligence, but they wanted to see how we would react to this. And so by reacting in such a weak way, then that gave the Chinese much more ability or much more reason to go into Taiwan, let's say, either this year or next year, because we've demonstrated weakness. So to answer your question, the rest of the world is seeing exactly what China has seen, and what our American people are seeing is just how weak this president is on national security. And unfortunately for our allies like Taiwan, this is really spelling much more danger from China, because China is emboldened by this exercise.
Should the United States really be on guard the next 2 years? Because we're about 2 years away from another presidential election. There's a chance Joe Biden won't be the president anymore. We don't know that, but that's the chance. Are other countries kind of planning the next 2 years to do whatever they want to the United States because they've seen the lack of response that comes their way?
Well, absolutely, because if you just look at Ukraine would never... Putin would never have invaded Ukraine if Donald Trump were president. And I'm not just saying this as somebody from the administration. If anybody objectively looks at this, Putin has invaded a neighboring country in every president that's elected this century, except for Donald Trump. Under Bush, in Bush's final year, he went and he invaded North Georgia. He invaded the Crimea under Obama, and now he did nothing under Trump, and then now under Biden, he saw what happened in Afghanistan, and then he decided, hey, look, the green light for me going back in to try to take over the Ukraine, or certainly some parts of the Ukraine. So to answer your question one more time, is that there is a lot of danger here, because the world, look at Iran. Iran now sees a Biden administration coming to the table and trying to renegotiate this nuclear deal that was a disaster. That gave them essentially a green light to produce nuclear weapons within 5 years. And they're still now, they look and they'll say, hey, we're signing up for this because there's no issue here.
John Elliott, former deputy assistant to President Trump, senior director for senior strategic communications at the National Security Council, here on the Hammer and Nigel show. What kind of information, what kind of details do you think the Chinese spy balloon was able to gain and send back to China?
Well, a couple of things here is that, one is that there's a lot better ability with a balloon like this to get what's called signals intelligence or communications intelligence. Because if you're up in the from a satellite, it's very tough to detect exactly kind of, you know, cell phone issues, et cetera, cell phone communications and other communications that aren't able to be detected from space. So the idea is that if you put a balloon over very sensitive sites like our nuclear weapons facilities, you can gather a lot more electronic intelligence than you can with other means. In other words, probably the best way you could do it is to pull up a pickup truck with a lot of sensitive listening devices and have it done right from the ground. But a balloon even provides better than that coverage, because it's overhead, but it's not high enough or it's not too high to gather that type of intelligence. So that's probably what they were looking at here. And once again, to do that over our most sensitive sites is really dangerous, and to allow that to happen is really malpractice on the part of this administration.
I totally agree. They should have been shot down immediately. But is there any chance that, you know, our military intelligence was spying on the spy balloon, you know, aircraft carriers or reconnaissance, airplanes recording and seeing and what's coming and going out of that spy balloon? Were we able to ascertain any information?
Well, without getting into classified means of tracking, you better believe that we knew that this thing was coming. What intel we got off the balloon is probably more an issue of what they can get from the debris field when it was taken down here off the coast of South Carolina. But bottom line is that we had a lot. We did not let this thing come over our country in order to gather intelligence on what their capabilities are with the balloon. There's no question about that. Right. So the issue is really what we can do in terms of a debris field and kind of put the pieces back together literally on this.
John, last thing before we let you go here. Again, there's so many stories coming out right now. It's hard to gauge what's true, what's not. But there's one story out that says that the military kind of knew about this during the Trump administration, but they didn't tell President Trump because they thought he might do something irrational. If that is the case, and again, we don't know if it's true or not, but if that is indeed the case, what's going on here? Should Mattis, who I believe was the secretary at the time, should he have to answer some questions?
Well, number one, I don't buy it. As somebody who is at the White House working for President Trump on the National Security Council, I was the NSC spokesman, and I don't buy that for a second, because President Trump gave the clear directive that he wanted to be kept in the loop on anything important national security-wise. And you better believe if there was a spy balloon coming over any part of our country that he would have been told that. But to your point, if this thing, if the military deliberately did withhold information from this president, and that's absolutely unconstitutional for them to do it, because the military works for one man, and that's the chief executive of the United States and the commander in chief of the military. And if they ever withheld information or any president because they thought that the president could not act in a rational way on something, that is just what's called treason. That is absolutely going against our Constitution and our founding documents and the way that we have structured our country, and it's unacceptable if it happened.
John Elliott, former deputy assistant to President Trump and senior director for strategic communications at the National Security Council. John, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your service to our country. Fascinating conversation. We'd like to have it again sometime soon.
Great, Hammer and Nigel. You guys run the best show in Indiana. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Hammer and Nigel presents.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Is this anything?
On 93 WIBC.
Hammer, how do we play? Is this anything?
I'll run some stories by you. You tell us if they're anything or not. That simple. Is this anything? Lawmakers in Tennessee have introduced a bill to replace Columbus Day with Super Bowl Monday to give everybody the day off after the game. Here are opinions from the people around Nashville weighing in.
Most of the people are either hungover or they just don't want to come to work because the Super Bowl runs way into late hours. I think it'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I would participate in any day off.
Why do we keep coming up with holidays?
It almost seems like a backdoor way to cancel a real holiday.
Yeah, that's something. As long as it's not some woke initiative to cancel Columbus Day because evil Christopher Columbus. But I love how that first guy. Can you just cue that up again? Just play that.
Most of the people are either hungover or they just don't want to.
I love how that guy's like, yeah, most of the people in this state are drunk and hungover anyway. So yeah, make it a holiday. I love that idea. I love the idea of making the day after Super Bowl a holiday. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I might have a little bit of a twinge of a hangover, especially as much money as I've got riding on this game.
You made a pretty sizable wager.
I did. It was out of emotion and anger, and I don't regret it, but let's just say I emptied my account, and I am rooting for the Eagles to win this game.
So was this in any way what you call an anger bet?
Yes, actually it was, because I live bet the Purdue-IU game when Purdue was down by 15 points. I got him at plus 500. I go, you know they're going to make a run. They're the number one team in the country. They got the best player in college basketball. You know Purdue is going to make a run. So I've been on a string of losses lately like you haven't seen. And I thought, I got this. And when they were down by one, I thought, this is it. I'm going to win. And then I was seething after the game, and I said, screw it, you know what, I need to double my account. I'm just going to put the entire $400 on the Eagles.
Let's
on the
go!
Eagles money line to win the Super Bowl. So it may have been an anger bet, as I like to call it. Yes.
And you said you've been in a rough streak lately?
Oh, a long time. Long.
So I'm going to hammer the Chiefs then. Four Bills, though. Four hundy on the Eagles. Or as Fetterman would say, the Eagles! Is this anything? A Michigan woman is being praised for returning almost $15,000 that she found on the ground while walking to work.
Wow.
Because of her generosity, people have raised tens of thousands of dollars to help get her a car so she doesn't have to walk anymore.
That's cool.
Here is Diane Gordon and Lieutenant Ivory talking about what happened and who the money belonged to.
Looked down on the ground and found a plastic bag that had a large sum of money in it. This doesn't belong to me. I need to call a police officer.
It never really crossed our mind to do anything other than turn it over. Inside the bag was also wedding cards. So we come to find out that these are gifts from a wedding that had occurred that day. I think it was $14,780 worth of cash.
It's okay. I mean, it didn't belong to me.
Oh, yeah, this is something that's cool. They got her a new car after fundraising and after she found all that money. And $15,000, was it?
$15,000.
I'd like to think I'd do the same thing. It just, you know, how arduous and cumbersome of a process would it be to find out who the owners were is the only thing. Like, I'm getting home, I'll call the non-police emergency number, and you could come and get it.
$15,000, though.
If they say come to the station, I'm like, nah, you guys got to come here and get this thing.
I think I would do the right thing. If I found $15,000, I would turn in $10,000 and say, I found this in the street. You know me. I'm here to help. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer's over there.
Hey now.
My name is Nigel. Disgraced former Twitter executives, Vijaya Gad, Yoel Roth, Jim Baker all testifying under oath before a House Oversight Committee this week in relation to, temporarily suppress the New York Post story. And, yeah, I hope they ask some very tough questions. It looks like the committee is going to have them and grill them. They subpoenaed. They're under subpoena. They're testifying. Who were you exactly were you talking to from the DNC in the closing weeks of the 2020 presidential election campaign when you decided to suppress the Hunter Biden story? Who exactly were you talking to from the Biden campaign? Who exactly from the FBI were you communicating with? All questions I'd like to know.
Looking forward to that, especially that weasel Yoel Roth, because he was kind of being a smartass about the fact that he was meeting with the FBI on a regular basis. Well, why were they meeting? Were they meeting to limit and silence some voices? We'll find out later this week. Tomorrow night, big night, Nige. Joe Biden. They're going to prop him up there like Weekend at Bernie's. They're going to put the peanut butter on his dentures to make it look like he's talking. And it's the State of the Union address. Tailgate worthy?
He's Mr. Ed. They used to make Mr. Ed talk. Tailgate worthy? Nah. No, I don't know. I might. I guess I'll just watch it because I have to for work. But I mainly just maybe get the Cliff Notes in the mornings.
I'm going to watch it. Again, we say this all the time. We watch this crap so you don't have to. It's a popular opinion, but we've been saying this for a long time, and we got a bingo card available. Have you seen the bingo card?
Hilarious.
So
did you tweet that out?
I did. On Twitter. I think okay. I've got it pinned at the top. Facebook and Instagram. Just look for Hammer and Nigel. The State of the Union bingo card is now available. What are some of the things that you see on the card
okay,
here,
okay, so if you're watching the State of the Union address tomorrow night and Biden says the word malarkey.
Oh, it's
go
a
ahead
favorite.
Mark it off.
Okay.
Biden falls down, trips.
Possible.
Promises free stuff to people. A come on man. This is my favorite one. Biden has a gross, wet cough.
That is on the card for sure.
Which, again, you can go to WIBC.com, go to the Hammer and Nigel page to right-click and download or screenshot it or whatever you do. And it's at Hammer and Nigel on Twitter and Facebook.
And if you're playing the game, like if you actually print off the card, send us a picture of you playing yeah. the game, and we'll retweet as many as we can at Hammer and Nigel.
If he says electric car, cross it off. Love it.
Stares and squints really long yeah. into the teleprompter.
Yep.
So that's coming up tomorrow. But today it's all about this Chinese spy balloon. It's the biggest story in the country because there are so many layers to it. When did Joe Biden know? Was he going to tell us? Did they only shoot it down because people in Montana saw the thing and there was outcry in this nation? Did Donald Trump know about it? So many questions, and it got me thinking, Nige.
Yes.
What other big things about balloons have happened? And then I did a little research, and I think this would be the perfect time for a special balloon edition of Fun Facts for Kids.
Okay. Wow.
It's time for Hammer and Nigel's Fun Facts for Kids.
These are little pieces of information that the younger listeners of the Hammer and Nigel show can enjoy.
All right.
Special balloon edition. The rubber balloon that we know today was first discovered by a scientist, Michael Faraday. Faraday died a painful death caused by mercury exposure. Slow and devastating symptoms included muscle weakness, twitching, and kidney damage.
Fun facts for kids!
I'm not sure how that's a... what you would call a fun fact.
The first passengers on hot air balloons were not humans. Instead, it was a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. The balloon flew for 15 minutes, then ultimately crashed to the ground, meaning there was a good possibility that nearby children playing in a meadow were splattered with the blood and bones of some of their favorite barnyard animals.
Fun facts for kids!
That's not a fun fact. That's neither fun nor I doubt that's a fact.
Oh, it's a fact. These are all true facts.
Okay.
You can doubt whether they're fun or not, but do not question my research. A surgical procedure called an angioplasty uses tiny balloons that are inserted into a blocked blood vessel. Mm-hmm. We've all heard about an angioplasty.
Sure, yeah.
Sometimes the chest pain can occur during angioplasty because the balloon briefly blocks off blood supply to the heart, causing imminent death.
Fun facts for kids!
I think this one's my favorite. Balloon Fest took place in 1986. It was an event in Cleveland, Ohio. And Balloon Fest was partnered with the local chapter of the United Way. They were trying to set a record by releasing almost 1.5 million balloons. Mm. It took place on September 27th, 1986, and was intended to be a harmless fundraising publicity stunt. But the balloons drifted back over the city. They also drifted over Lake Erie, and they landed in the surrounding areas, causing problems for traffic. The nearby airport had to be closed for a little bit. And the event also interfered with the United States Coast Guard rescue attempt for two boaters who were later found drowned to death.
Fun facts for kids!
That is awful.
Balloon Fest 86. I wonder if anybody has a t-shirt.
Interfered with the Coast Guard search for two boaters.
Dolphins, whales, turtles, and many other marine objects.
I don't like this is where this is going.
As well as animals such as cows, dogs, sheep, turtles, birds, have all been hurt or killed by balloons. The animal is usually killed from the balloon because they ingest it and it blocks the digestive tract, leaving them unable to take in nutrients. So the animal slowly starves to death. Fun facts for kids!
That is one of the worst things I think I've heard in this segment.
It's a fact. Lastly, balloon dueling is actually a thing.
I'm sorry?
Balloon dueling. French statesmen de Grandpas and Le Pic had an actual duel while on hot air balloons fighting over a woman. Le Pic's balloon was shot, and he was shot to death and ultimately fell to earth, where his bullet-ridden corpse smacked the pavement like a sack of wet cement. Fun facts for kids!
Well, kids, I hope you stayed in the car for that one.
See? That was, the criticism of this show that we're not kid-friendly, fake news. The reason we've got Madonna blaring in the background is she was at the Grammys last night. Well, yeah, we think it was Madonna.
See? Last night at the Grammys, Madonna did like a slightly obnoxious intro of Sam Smith and Kim Petras' satanic performance of Unholy. That's a whole other issue. But listen to the crowd. Clearly the crowd was not reacting the way Madonna wanted. Here's part of her. And this is like really a drawn out intro. We'll play the whole thing.
Are you ready for a little controversy? Come on, people, let's make some noise. Y'all are going to sleep over here. So, here's what I've learned after 4 decades in music. If they call you shocking, scandalous, troublesome, problematic, provocative, or dangerous, you are definitely onto something. That's where you make noise.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you.
Wasn't that just the worst intro you've ever had? First of all, y'all gonna sleep over there is no way to begin something where you want people to go get fired up.
Maybe they didn't recognize that it was Madonna because her face is so weird now.
And by the way, earlier in the show, the crowd was all on their feet dancing to Stevie Wonder and Chris Stapleton. So it looked like the crowd was just fine. So I think it was pretty much her. But yeah, you come out on stage and you go, y'all are going to sleep over here, and it gets immediately quiet. She just ruined it.
And then that's when you're supposed to clap. Takes us to something that we've done on this show before. Great moments in Please Clap history. Jeb Bush.
I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
That was Madonna.
That's exactly what Madonna said at the end. Please, what is this called? Great moments in Please Clap history?
Ladies and gentlemen, Amy Klobuchar.
And every single time I have run, I have won every single congressional district in my state, including Michelle Bachmann's. Okay? That's when you guys are supposed to cheer. Okay?
Oh.
All right, so.
Just a little reminder that Amy Klobuchar finished above Kamala Harris in the Democrat primaries.
Well, they all did.
But think about how unlikable she is, and she beat Kamala, which brings us to Kamala Harris.
Yellow school buses are our nation's largest form of mass transit. How about that? Every day. So yes, and let's applaud because it gets them where they need to go.
Nobody's applauding.
Wow.
We're clapping for yellow school buses. I don't understand what's going on here.
Great moments in Please Clap history.
And then when Fartwell, Eric Swalwell, was running for president in one of the worst campaigns I've ever seen in my life, he thought he'd have this powerful speech and he thought he had a line. And then keep in mind, we have not edited this segment. Listen to the silence. Not one person claps.
But I will always be real with you. I will be bold without the bold. My wife and I.
Oh, that's painful.
This is what it probably sounded like to Eric Swalwell.
But I will always be real with you. I will be bold without the bowl. My wife and I.
That had to be the longest, like, 2 to 3 seconds of his life.
That was awkward. Great moments in Please Clap history. That's my favorite new segment on the show.
If you're looking for a reason to drink tonight.
I need a reason?
Well, just maybe. All who right. knows? Rick Astley is 57 years old today.
Hey!
Never gonna give you up.
Oh, yeah, that was a great rendition.
Thank you. Thank you. So, 50, Allison,
how old?
He's 57.
Oh, that's not bad. This is almost 10 years older than I am.
He was pretty young when he was making hits.
Okay.
So, Allison, as our new producer here, we're going to do Choose Your Own Adventure, okay? I've got 3 clips from Rick Astley. I want you to play the one that you like the best. Do you want to hear Rick Astley on stage with the Foo Fighters doing his hit, Never Gonna Give You Up? Do you want to hear Rick Astley doing a cover of Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars? Or Rick Astley performing Highway to Hell? Allison, choose your own adventure.
Definitely Highway to Hell.
Let's do Highway to Hell. Let's light it up. Let's do it. It's him on the drums, too.
He's playing the drums and singing at the same time.
Yeah. He's a talented musician.
57. I want to hear the other one. I want to hear the Foo Fighters.
On stage with the Foo Fighters, they brought him out, like, as a surprise at a concert. The crowd's into it.
I think he sounds pretty good here.
Here we go.
I would have been so fired up to that at the concert.
I'm here for it.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
On 93 WIBC.
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer is right over there. What an hour of radio we have in store for you. Talk about some of these special guests coming up this hour, please.
Man, we've got the iconic voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher. What a game that was on Saturday. What an atmosphere. And he was given his props for 50 years behind the mic for
amazing.
The Hoosiers.
Unbelievable.
That and, oh, by the way, William Shatner on the Hammer and Nigel show.
James T. Kirk.
The old brick shat house. I am so excited for this. He's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. They're having a screening of the Wrath of Khan at Butler in March.
Yeah, Clues Hall. So they do the screening, and then he comes out afterwards and answers questions and does behind-the-scenes stories and talks about his life and stuff.
Right. Really cool thing, and we'll talk to him about that coming up in just a little bit. But as we like to do on Mondays on this program, we like to take a look.
Yeah, just absolutely love doing this.
At the crime that's happening here in the city of Indianapolis. So Friday through Sunday, we consider that the weekend. At least, we always say that because we don't know, you know, what went on without the police being called.
Sure.
At least 11 people shot, 4 stabbed, and 3 killed.
God.
So if you break down that number, that's an average of 5 people shot or stabbed with 1 killed each day.
And in per capita, those are Chicago-style numbers.
We're right? kicking Chicago's backside in homicides per capita. Let that sink in. In January, if Indianapolis had the same population as Chicago, the homicides would be in the 60s, because Chicago had 44.
Yeah.
So we would be substantially outpacing Chicago if we had the same population. It's unbelievable. And here's another example of what we talk about all the time. This revolving door of the justice system where horrible people are allowed to get right back out on the streets. 47-year-old Lamont Franklin, arrested for attempted murder, but records show that he's been taken to jail at least 18 times since 2004.
Oh, just slap an ankle bracelet on him.
Rub his hair. Tell him, get out of here, you little scamp. You'll be fine. Don't do that again.
This makes me sick. And the really scary thing is that IMPD's recruiting numbers are down, Hammer. And that's a scary situation in and of itself, separate from the crime situation here in Indy.
When you look at the recruiting numbers, it's not pretty. But in years past, you might be able to skate as long as you're retaining your officers. They're not doing that right now. As a matter of fact, IMPD lost 11 more officers to various other police departments in the last couple of weeks. IMPD is down to 285 officers. That's how many they're down. They've lost 285 officers compared to where they should be. That's a scary number.
Wow. Say that again. Make sure you're clear. There's more than 285 officers.
Oh, right? Yeah. They're down 285 officers from where they should be. Think about 285 police officers. If they were in front of your house, you would say, that's a lot of police officers. But you look at how big Indianapolis is, and now down 285, that's a big number, man. That's not good.
Well, let me tell you something that is good. Are you ready for some good news?
Please.
Are you ready? Can we just talk about the price of eggs? They have finally started to drop, Hammer.
Oh! Looks like we made it. All right. So I'm not going to have to cover potatoes this Easter?
You have to take out a home loan, Golden Oak lending, get a mortgage, get an equity in my house to buy a carton of eggs. So the price of a dozen eggs has dropped 15 to 35 cents on average across the United States.
So, progress.
Yeah, right.
But gas is going back up, though, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an uptick in gas, and it's so annoying. And the price of eggs, truly, it's still high. It's the cost of feed, the cost of transportation, and then you throw in a little bird flu in there.
Oh, sure. I thought you told me this was good news.
We did play the Looks Like We Made It music, but in reality, it's just kind of crappy news.
Now, wait a minute. You're telling me that we have the greatest economy, according to Joe Biden, yet we're still having expensive eggs and gas is going up and there's bird flu. And
speaking of Joe Biden, we have the State of the Union bingo card up right now, don't we? Is it
yes,
up right now?
It is up right now on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can print off the image or you could go to WIBC.com. There's an article there where you can download and print off your State of the Union bingo card for tomorrow night from your friends here at the Hammer and Nigel
Show.
What
does it have on it? You describe what it has on it when you're watching the State of the Union address.
So, for example, if Joe Biden says assault weapons, that's on there. If Joe Biden trips and falls, that's on there. If he has a gross wet cough, that's on there. All of your favorite Joe Biden type of things are on this bingo card.
Oh man, I can't wait. So that's available right now.
An open mouth stare is on there.
Go to WIBC.com to download that, or Facebook. It's on our Twitter at Hammer and Nigel. Of course, we're keeping on top of the Chinese spy balloon that was shot down on Saturday.
It was shot down by Alec Baldwin, I'm being told. They brought in the big guns to get it down.
I got to tell you, it was riveting television. The only ones that were covering it was Fox. So it was perfect because I sat on my butt and watched that for like 2 hours. And that led right into the IU-Purdue game.
Oh, wow. Your Saturday was set.
It was great until I placed a live bet on Purdue, multiple live bets, because I knew they were going to make a run, and it didn't work out so well for me. But we shot down the Chinese balloon that was floating across the country. But look, I got to tell you, I got to be honest with you, that doesn't mean it isn't a good gift for Valentine's Day this year.
Not sure what to get your special someone this Valentine's Day? Why not surprise them with a colorful Chinese spy balloon bouquet from Party City? Show your Valentine how much you love them by watching their every movement 24/7. The Chinese Spy Balloon Bouquet from Party City. It's the gift that says you're always there for them because you're always there.
Oh, man, that spy balloon thing is just an embarrassment for our country. Just another embarrassment. And Biden and the good time party boys at the Pentagon are all high-fiving themselves after they shot that thing out of the air after it completed its mission.
Right. Like, imagine if law enforcement had that same policy. Well, we knew where the killer was. We were tracking the killer. And after he killed 13 more people, we made our arrest. Like, what other industry does this philosophy fly in?
Oh, man. Unbelievable. It's the Hammer Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. Hammer's here. This is awesome. Iconic actor William Shatner, a.k.a. James T. Kirk, coming to Indy and Fort Wayne next month, doing a screening of Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan at Clues Hall. And then after the movie, he's going to come out on stage and tell behind-the-scenes stories, stuff about his career, and take questions from the audience. It's an honor to have William Shatner live on the DriveHuber.com hotline. Bill, how are you?
Oh, well, and thank you for that long introduction, because I am coming to that theater, and it is a wonderful evening in the theater. You really get your money's worth. This wonderful movie, all refurbished. Then I'll come out and help amuse and amaze everybody with you. So it's a wonderful evening of theater. You see a film, and then I'll come out and help out, and we have a great time. So I'm looking forward to seeing audiences in Indianapolis and Fort Wayne.
And we'll talk definitely more about the screening, but I think we can start it in any number of areas with your career, but I think during your era there were like 6 Star Trek movies. What is it about The Wrath of Khan that still resonates with fans to this day?
Well, it's simple. You know, Star Wars came out with all that paraphernalia, and then we came out with Star Trek the movie, and that had a lot of bizarres. The secret behind the series, it seemed to me, was the great story that Star Trek would tell, and clever science fiction, and that was the reason for the success, in my opinion. So the Wrath of Khan harkens back to that history of a simple story, emotional, told simply, and not a great many special effects, and just human beings interacting, even though it's 300-400 years from now, they feel the same love, horror, hate, all those basic emotions are felt so far in the past and so far in the future, because that's humanity. And these stories were human stories, and Star Trek the Next Generation, the Wrath of Khan, is a human story, and it moves people all the time. And then after the film's over, I'll come out and try and keep the entertainment going. And so for that evening in the theater, you get film and me, and it's unique and different and rewarding.
So, William, when you say you keep the entertainment going, you've done these types of things before, and I know you go to conventions and there are screenings of Star Trek. How often do you get a question that you've never heard before?
Well, then you mean, do they ask me one giant question? No. Sometimes the questions are the same, and I may have a story about it or not, but if I'm on top of my game, what I'll do is question in a more philosophical way, try and turn it to why we want to know weird. Why do we want to know weird questions and not questions about what's the most loving question? What's the most insightful question you've ever been? I mean, other words than what's the weird and what's the strangest question and what are you asked most of? I mean, why is that of interest? So that's the way I might turn the whole question around in the theater.
So we have our boss in studio, Mr. Shatner, and he is a big fan of your work. And this is rare. He never comes in. I don't think he likes our show, but he's here today just to speak to you. This is our boss, David.
Hello, Mr. Shatner. David. I wanted to make sure they treated you well. No, they're just awful. I don't tell anybody, but golly, they ask the strangest questions. Like, so, what's the strangest question? I mean, that's a strange question, man.
Well, hey, I'll ask you a question. I don't know if it's a strange question, but something that a couple of my friends that are big Star Trek fans have talked about before, that Wrath of Khan was the first movie we ever cried at. Do you get that?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. It's a very emotional film. And when it's, you know, when you love the characters, whether you've just met them from the opening credits or you know them over, in this case, 79 shows, what happens to them becomes a personal thing. And now we see it on the big screen, and the people you learn to love so many times over so many years has a problem. Then it's your problem, and you and the audience feel it deeply.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I cried twice because it was when you guys were in engineering, when Spock was dying, and then your eulogy when your voice broke on his soul was the most human. I was like, oh, my God. And then, of course, I cried again during Generations when you died. So. And in spite of that, Star Trek's brought me a great deal of joy.
I just want to tell you this. The guys who work for you call you crier. Here comes the weeper.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, apparently you're crying all the time.
What's the most famous scene in that movie, do you think? Is it the scene where Spock is dying, or is it the iconic moment when you look up into the sky and yell, "Khan!"
I didn't do that.
You did a lot better than I did.
No, that was pretty darn good. You won't be able to talk for a week. You know, the truth of the matter is, I don't get to the theater until well into the film is being, I mean, it's an hour and a half, so I don't have to sit backstage for an hour and a half. So I come in about 45 minutes before the end of the movie, and, you know, look around and see if there's anything to eat, you know, and get some tea and make my way backstage. And then I hear the end credits, I know I'm just in time. So to say which is my favorite scene, I don't remember. Go ahead.
William Shatner coming to Fort Wayne, coming to Indy. The Indy Show, March 12th at Clues Memorial Hall. So we're going to get you out of here with one more question from David, because he is super fanning right now.
Here's what I want to know, David. What do you want to know?
It's about you. It's not about the show. And it's like, I think one of the most interesting things about you is that you're about to turn 70, right? You're about to turn 92 years old, and you don't look it, you don't sound it, you don't act it. How, I mean...
Can you go back to the first figure?
I mean, is it genetics? Is it the way you live? Is it luck of the draw?
No, I've got this pill. I'm marketing it right now. You can get three bottles. If you want three bottles,
you look great, though, man. You look like a million damn dollars, William.
Get one free. And then you order the one free, and they'll complete your order and say, we got another bottle for you for 10% off. No, I don't know what it is. It's just talking to guys like you. It flushes your face.
Well, you are a national treasure.
Oh, I'm going to be buried soon.
William Shatner, Star Trek II.
Buried treasure.
The Wrath of Khan. It's coming to Fort Wayne. There's a screening in Indianapolis. Tickets are available now. There's questions, there's fun, everything that you want. William, we could go on for hours, but I know you got to run. Thank you for talking to us here in Indy.
Thank you. A pleasure. I hope I see you at the theater. Bye-bye.
William Shatner, the old brick shat house on the phone there, right there.
He's a little surly guy.
I loved it. Bringing the heat, man. So we'll get that posted online at WIBC.com.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there with a very special guest on the DriveHubler.com hotline.
The longtime and iconic voice of the Indiana Hoosiers is Don Fisher. Fish, before we get into the game this past weekend, you
were honored. I believe during the game on Saturday, 50 years behind the mic for the Hoosiers, my man. Congratulations.
Well, it just means you're old, guys. So. I mean, I the first thing I said to the crowd was, I laid in bed last night trying to think what I was going to say, and then I realized I've been doing this for a half a century. You got to be kidding me. So at any rate, it was really nice. It was a nice tribute, and had all the guys that I have as color analysts on my broadcast, both football and basketball, out there with the exception of Pete Campisi, who was in Florida on vacation, and the other guy was Royce Waltman, who was a terrific coach and obviously a former assistant to Coach Knight. He was our color analyst for 4 years back in the 2000s, 2010 area, and just a great guy, but he passed away with bladder cancer. So everybody else was out there.
Yeah, I'm personally just a big fan of yours. There's no way I could do in broadcasting what you do, and I'm sure it was awesome having the crowd cheer for you, and we always appreciate you making time for us here on the Hammer and Nigel show. And then the game. Wow.
Wow. Oh, by the way, there was a game on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a lot more important than my half. Yeah, Fish, it was a special game. It really was.
All right, settle an argument that I had with my old man this past weekend. We were talking about rowdy, raucous crowds at Assembly Hall. What had more juice in it? This past Saturday, where Purdue comes in as the number one team in America, I think for the first time to Assembly Hall as number one, right, or when Kentucky rolled in a few years back, undefeated with the Watt shot. Which crowd had a little bit more juice to it?
You're asking me to say something that I can't possibly imagine, because both of those crowds were spectacular. And honestly, we've had a lot of spectacular crowds over the years. It really kind of started back when I started in 73. I saw my first Purdue game was Indiana-Purdue in Assembly Hall, and Indiana won it on a last-second block by Steve Green on Mike Steele's shot. John Laskowski just hit two free throws to give Indiana the lead, and the students stormed the court that day. And everybody's going, what? What? Students storming the court? I mean, that should never happen in Indiana. We expect to win. Oh, no. They've been charging the floor for a long time, trust me.
And that's another aspect of the conversation that I'm seeing all over social media. You know, maybe it's Purdue fans who are a little bitter, but are you okay with a court storming? If you consider yourself a blue blood of the sport, are you good with the court storming?
Well, I would prefer not to have it stormed, to be honest with you, but at the same time, I get it. These students, they're enamored with their school, with their program, with their players, those kinds of things. I get it 100%. So I'm not going to sit here and badmouth a bunch of kids that run out there and want to enjoy the moment. And I think it's special in that regard, too. So as much as an old curmudgeon that I am, I will say that I don't have a big problem with it either way, to be honest.
Iconic voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, here on the Hammer and Nigel show. So talk about the start of the game. IU started out very strong, didn't they?
Played the best first half defense I've seen them play all year long. It was spectacular. They did a great job of taking Purdue out of what they wanted to do offensively, and they did a great job at the offensive end, knocking in shots, scoring 50 points in the first half. But the energy that they expounded in that first half, I think, took a little bit out of them. I think from an energy perspective, Indiana's defense wasn't as good in the second half, but it was still good enough. And you knew that Purdue was going to make a run. Yeah. And they made adjustments at halftime. And Edie is so spectacularly good. People sit here and talk about Zach Edie like, he's not going to be in the NBA. Well, that's baloney. He's 7'4", 300 pounds. You can't move the guy. And he's got tremendous touch, and he's improved dramatically all 3 years he's been at Purdue. And he's playing tons of minutes this year, which people thought that can't happen because he's just too big to have that kind of energy level. But he's proving everybody wrong, and he's got a tremendous touch. I have a lot of great respect for this kid, and he just plays. There's no showboating. There's none of that stuff. He just plays, and he is really, really good.
Don, have you seen a player pick up a team like Trayce Jackson-Davis has done the last month and just carry them on his back? Have you seen anything like that during your time behind the mic?
I'm not sure that I have. I mean, I've seen some great players at Indiana, but, you know, in the Bob Knight era, it was always role players and everybody playing their role, and you know, it wasn't just one guy. And in this case, it's not just one guy, but he has taken that role on big time. There's no question in my mind that Trace is playing the best of his career. He is willing this team in some ball games to win. And I'm proud of him. I'm proud of what he's been able to accomplish. And he's matured dramatically over his 4 years at Indiana. He's just a really great kid, number one. But number two, he's a heck of a basketball player.
Talk about Coach Woodson for a second. What he's been able to accomplish with this team ever since taking over as head coach.
Well, I mean, his second year now, he's got him in third place in the league. Of course, there are six teams tied for third place right now in the Big Ten. But honestly, I think he's doing a great job with his team. I mean, these kids have bought into what he's selling. They believe in what he's preaching out there, what he wants them to do. It's not always easy. It's, you know, execution's a critical thing, and you've got to be able to do it game in and game out. And some of these guys are pretty young, and they're learning. And look at the different guys he's, you know, kind of had in his – the young guys that he has brought along this year. Caleb Banks, all of a sudden, in the last three games or so, has actually started to play some and getting opportunities and taking advantage of them. We saw that from Hood Schifino and Malik Renu early on. Renu kind of plateaued a little bit, where Hood Schifino has kind of been the guy since X has gone out of the ball game. But, and so he's a very mature kid and obviously a calm guy and a calm presence out there. And he's had his bad moments, too. He didn't score hardly at all in the Maryland ball game that Indiana got beat to end their five-game winning streak. But then he comes back and has a phenomenal game against Purdue on Saturday. So what we're talking about here is development. Guys developing as the year goes on. And it's special to watch these guys and see them get better and then get their opportunity and take advantage of it.
I want to talk about the upcoming Rutgers game here in just a moment. Before we get to there, Fish, what's different now with this Indiana team that wasn't there a couple weeks ago when they lost at home to Northwestern, blown out on the road at Penn State, blew a huge lead at Iowa? What's changed?
Well, obviously, Race Thompson is back in the lineup because Race went out in that Iowa ball game just before halftime, and obviously that was the second starter that goes down, and you don't know when you're going to get the guy back. And I thought it took some steam out of this team psychologically. I really believe that. And then they also had, after they lost the third ball game, which was to Penn State, and got pounded by Penn State in that contest, They came back and they had a team meeting. It was a players only meeting. I think Trace Jackson Davis called it. I might find that out more today if he was actually the guy that decided that was what was going to happen. But they had a team only meeting, a players only meeting, and all of a sudden, and of course, they really had a tough practice leading up to the Wisconsin game. I guess maybe one of those 3-hour jobs that nobody wants to be participating in. So at any rate, and Mike was pretty tough on him, to say the least, leading into that contest. Well, they all of a sudden they come out and they play with their hair on fire. And that's what we've been waiting to see on a consistent basis this year. And for the most part, since that ball game, since that Penn State ball game, they have played the best defense that they've played throughout much of the season, and the offense has come around as well. And they're having more and more guys contribute now. Trace is obviously the key guy. He has taken that team on his shoulders. But Tamar Bates has gotten better. Trey Galloway has been, you know, terrific most of the year. And in the starter's role, he just has gotten better and better. And Hood Schifino, of course, is a freshman that, you know, we've talked about him all season, how good he is. But there are different people at almost every ball game that step up and give him some really positive minutes, and I think that's the key.
So tomorrow, the Hoosiers back in action, Rutgers coming to Assembly Hall. Now, I don't know how much you pay attention to this kind of stuff, but in the sports betting community, Don, we call this a trap game, where one team's coming off of a big game, and lo and behold, there's a quick turnaround against somebody that's already beaten you before. Give us a little preview of what we can expect tomorrow.
Well, I think it's going to be a very tough ball game, number one, because I think Rutgers might be as good a defensive basketball team as there is in the country, not just the Big Ten. I'm telling you, these guys are really, really good at the defensive end of the floor. And they've had guys that have just taken advantage of IU in the past. Obviously, Ron Harper Jr. And the Baker kid a couple of years ago. And now they've got Paul McKahee playing tremendously well at the point guard position. Caleb McConnell is a defensive presence that nobody is able to deal with almost in any ball game. And they beat Michigan State at Madison Square Garden this past weekend. They are in second place by themselves right now in the conference, and they have six straight wins over Indiana and have won wow. eight of the last nine these two teams. Think about that for a while. So we're talking about a basketball team that Indiana has, or that they've had Indiana's number, and Indiana, I know, is sick of it. Trace has never beaten Rutgers in his 4 years at Indiana right now.
Wow.
And he wants it in the worst way. I know that.
Unbelievable. Tip-off is at 6:30, pregame 5:30, right here on 93 WIBC. Again, Fish, congratulations. 50 years on the mic for the Hoosiers.
Amazing.
And we're looking forward to that call tomorrow night.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Right, another hour of the Hammer and Nigel Show coming up after 6 o'clock. Everything you need to know about the Chinese spy balloon. And as much of an embarrassment and as a disaster as this debacle was, Hammer, I can only hope there was military surveillance, like a reconnaissance plane following this spy balloon, taking in information, spying on the people that are spying on us, recording what's coming out of that thing, and maybe we'll be able to glean some information that way. That's the only part of it that I hope could be somewhat redeeming.
I have such little faith in anything Joe Biden's in charge of, including our military at this point. Like, it feels like our military is more focused on what pronouns balloon preferred as opposed to getting the actual secrets off of it.
And now, you know, the lines changed. The narratives changed. They said, oh, Trump knew about all these balloons during his administration and didn't do anything about it. And now the narratives changed to, oh, well, we just found out about these supposed balloons during the Trump administration and are just now letting you know about it. It's the whole narrative, the whole lot, it's all crap, and we'll fill you in after 6 o'clock. Now, real quick, this guy's a hero, UPS driver, getting credit for saving a 76-year-old woman's life when she fell into a creek in her backyard, freezing temperatures. He pulled her out while he was delivering her package to her house.
Wow.
Like just so she just happened to be there. Here is the driver, and then the woman that fell in the creek talking about it.
Kind of put my arms under her and cradled her and said, okay, baby, let's go. And up we went. I don't know anyone at one time or another does not need help for something.
Another 10 minutes and I would have been a goner.
She's not just a customer now. She's also a friend.
I mean, what a coincidence. You just happened to be delivering a package. I mean, you know, God was smiling down on her that day, man.
Right place, right time. And the line that stuck out to me, and we say this a lot during the radiothon, everybody needs a little help once in a while, whether it's when you're younger, whether it's when you're older, or in a situation like this.
By the way, listen to this again.
Kind of put my arms under her and cradled her and said, okay, baby, let's go.
What a misogynist, a sexist pig he is.
How dare you touch her? Did you ask consent first? Did you ask consent before saving her life? It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.